Shalom, and thank you for listening at BethEmmanuel.org. Your regular financial contributions make it possible for Beth Emmanuel to make D. Thomas Lancaster's weekly sermons available online. We genuinely appreciate your support and hope that you are blessed by these teachings. Feel free to download these audio files and share them with your friends and family. Please consider joining Beth Emmanuel's extended virtual family and support our efforts for the kingdom with a gift by clicking on the Donate tab at BethEmmanuel.org.
Last week, I told you the parable of the good Muslim, right? Remember that? The parable of the good Muslim. Then, a few days later, the world saw another parable played out before its eyes, the parable of the wicked Muslims, who carried out a massacre of worshipers at a Jerusalem synagogue during the Shacharit prayers. So, the religion of peace strikes again. You might say, well, okay, now where's your good Muslim? And likewise, we might have asked the same thing at Sukkot in the year 51 Common Era, just 2 decades after the Master told the parable of the Good Samaritan, when Galilean pilgrims were passing through Samaria on their way to celebrate Sukkot in Jerusalem. And as the pilgrimage caravan entered Samaritan territory near the city of Jenin, that is modern Jenin, a Samaritan band attacked the Galilean pilgrims, robbed them, massacred them. And I can imagine people saying, all right, where's your good Samaritan now? Let's turn to Luke chapter 10, verse 28, where our Master affirms that the greatest commandment is to love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your might. And the second is like it, to love your neighbor, to love your fellow as yourself. Luke chapter 10, beginning in verse 28. And he said to him, you have answered correctly. Do this and you will live. But the man who was questioning him, desiring to justify himself, said to Jesus, and who is my neighbor? Last week we were talking about this, and we learned that when he asked, who is my neighbor, this expert in the scriptures, he's asking actually a halakhic question, a legal question. He was wondering whether such love, this love of your neighbor as yourself, if this must actually be extended to all Jewish people, or if he could perhaps narrow it down a little bit. He's wondering if that also includes Sadducees and Herodians and apostates and secular Jews and heretics and so forth. He hoped that Yeshua could maybe narrow down the field a little bit, narrow down the scope of this commandment. But Yeshua did not narrow down the scope, did he? Instead, he broadened the scope by telling the enigmatic parable of the Good Samaritan. Yeshua replied, a man was going down from Jerusalem to Jericho, and he fell among robbers who stripped him and beat him and departed, leaving him half dead. So last week we were talking about this, how this story takes place on this dangerous strip of road between Jericho and Jerusalem. Treacherous road with steep precipices and sudden drops and long, lonely, dry, waterless wilderness stretches that has historically been a haunt of bandits and ne'er-do-wells. And Rabbi Yeshua and his disciples traveled that road often enough themselves on their pilgrimages to and from Jerusalem. They knew it well. According to the Talmud, actually, half of all the priests that served in the temple, and the Levites also, at that time, lived in the city of Jericho. So priests and Levites are always on this road, going back and forth from Jericho to Jerusalem, coming and going. Must have been passing on that road on a daily basis. So in our parable, the parable of the Good Samaritan, the arrival, the first guy that comes along the road and sees this man who's beaten man left half dead is a priest, first priest. The second guy to come along is a Levite. And what you have here is this parable is following a well-known formulaic Jewish convention. Synagogue protocol, for example, calls first a priest, a Kohen, to the Torah, then a Levi is called to the Torah, and then a Yehudi, a common Israelite, a common Jew. So, first Aliyah to the Torah belongs to a priest. If we had someone who was a Kohen here, he'd always be the first up, you know, first up to bat. Second up to bat is always a Levi, a Levite, someone from the tribe of Levi, and then all the rest of the calls to Torah belong to Yehudim, a common Jew. So it's sort of a priest, a Levite, and a Jew. A priest, a Levite, and a Jew walk into a bar. It's like that. It's the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. It's boom, 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 right? So as Yeshua tells his story, he's building on that anticipation. His listeners know where this is going. We know where this is going. The priest comes along, but the priest doesn't stop to help the man. The Levite comes along, the Levite doesn't stop to help the man. So now it should be, and an Israelite came along, you know, and he should be the good guy. Everyone expects the third traveler to be Jewish, to be just a Jewish fellow. After all, to love your neighbor as yourself is understood conventionally, love your fellow Jew. So the priest, Levite, Israelite formula heightens expectation and adds to the shock value of the reversal when the third character to come down the road proved not to be a brother Israelite, but one of those reprehensible Samaritans. The priest and the Levite who saw the man left for dead, I think they may have had issues of ritual purity in mind. We don't know that was the case. We don't know what their motive for not stopping was. But perhaps they assumed that this guy was dead, or at least ritually impure, and they're on their way to Jerusalem, maybe, to serve in the temple services. And if they're to stop and come in contact with a dead man, a contact with a corpse, is going to render them unclean and unable to serve in the temple at all. And it's a big deal to serve in the temple. You know, you only get 2 weeks out of the year, and they'd be forfeiting their opportunity to serve in the temple. The Torah itself says in Leviticus chapter 21, this is on the level of mitzvah, a commandment, speak to the Kohanim, to the priests, the sons of Aaron, and say to them, no one shall make himself unclean for a dead body among his people. It's a mitzvah. So if that's the point of the story, if Yeshua intended to illustrate the tension between a ceremonial concern and human compassion, then the story actually fits very well with many of the stories of the Master's Sabbath day healings. In those stories, Yeshua taught that compassion for your genuine human need takes precedence over ceremonial concern. And for that reason, he was willing to set the prohibitions of the Sabbath day aside for the sake of showing compassion, because something greater than the Sabbath was present, namely human need, genuine human need, human suffering. And the opportunity to alleviate human suffering he considered to be weightier and more important than the obligation to observe the Sabbath. Then, if that's the case, this ties the parable of the Good Samaritan to his broader ethical teaching about placing compassion for human beings ahead of ritual compunction. And when teaching on that theme, Yeshua always invoked a proof text from Hosea 6:6 that says, "For I delight in mercy rather than sacrifice, in the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." Hashem says, "I delight in chesed." It's right in the middle of our ark. Chesed, loving kindness, mercy. I delight in chesed rather than sacrifice, in knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings. And use this verse to mean God desires acts of kindness and compassion for other human beings more than he desires ceremonies and rituals, even if those ceremonies and rituals are indeed commandments. Yeshua used this text from Hosea 6 to prove that doing kindness and alleviating human suffering takes precedence over these other concerns. And if that's the case, then how much more so should the priority of alleviating human suffering come before the concern about contracting ritual impurity? So, and this should have been, this is not unique to Yeshua. The Pharisees taught the same thing, you know. Not in regard to healing, but in regard to a dead body. according to the Pharisees, ritual conscientiousness was no excuse for neglecting a human corpse. The Pharisees considered the burial of a neglected corpse an important obligation incumbent upon anyone who came across it. There's a commandment in the Torah that says you shall not leave a dead body hanging overnight. And they said this is a weightier commandment than the prohibition against contracting ritual impurity if you're a priest. And so the Pharisees taught, in the Mishnah, the sages taught, a mitzvah called the mate mitzvah, the death commandment or the corpse commandment. And this obligation applies even, they said, to the high priest. It supersedes the prohibition on becoming unclean. So this is from the Mishnah in Tractate Nazir, which means Nazirite. It says, a high priest and a Nazirite must not contract uncleanness on account of burying a dead body, even their close relatives. However, they must contract uncleanness on account of burying a neglected corpse. And Rabbi Eliezer says, let a high priest contract corpse uncleanness on account of a neglected corpse. Rabbi Eliezer says, even a high priest would be required if he came across a neglected corpse to attend to the corpse. Have to set aside the prohibition on the one hand in order to keep the mitzvah of the mate mitzvah on the other. Midrash Sifrei goes one step further and says, oh yeah? Even if the high priest was a Nazirite, you know, it's still his duty to perform this duty of burying a neglected corpse, even if there's if there's no one else available to do it. So, given that that was the teaching of the Pharisees regarding this sort of situation, then we should ask, why then did the priest and the Levite pass by this man on the road? Well, they were Sadducees. Sadducees reject traditions of men. Sadducees reject all those Pharisaic traditions, and in their rigid sola scriptura literalism, they did not want to hazard the possibility of corpse contamination. And even more likely, I think, they simply did not want to inconvenience themselves to help someone in need. So it became a convenient excuse. That guy could be dead. I don't want to become unclean. The point of the parable is that they did not extend their definition of love your neighbor as yourself to the injured man lying beside the road. So he tells this parable, and of course, the punchline of the parable is that then a Samaritan comes and helps the man, right? And so then Yeshua asks this fellow who's telling the parable to, he says, so which of these, is a neighbor, was a neighbor to the man? Which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man who fell into the robber's hands? Well, the Samaritan, obviously, right? Only the Samaritan behaved like a neighbor and demonstrated the attitude of love commanded in Leviticus 19:18, you shall love your neighbor as yourself. The Samaritan fulfilled the commandment and became the injured Jewish man's neighbor. In his commentary on the Gospel of Luke, Gospel scholar Howard Marshall sums up the lesson this way. He says, here's the point. One cannot define who is one's neighbor. One can only be a neighbor to someone else. I like that. Therefore, a person's neighbor is not limited to one's fellow Jew, or from the Samaritan's point of view, to one's fellow Samaritan. The enmity between Samaritans and Jews, you know, has to be understood here. I think we talked about this last week, but the Gospel of John puts it pretty well when it says, Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. That's John 4:9. There's no love between the Jews and the Samaritans. And Samaritans do not ordinarily perform kindnesses for Jews. It's important to understand that. It's not as if all the Samaritans were just, you know, these lovely people that were out doing good deeds for Jewish people. You know, this is an exception to a rule. And it's an exception to what you would expect. What you would expect would be for a Samaritan to see an injured Jew and say, good. But by bringing a Samaritan into the story, Yeshua indicates that the definition of one's neighbor must be broad enough to include even one's enemy. And he broadens this application, love your neighbor as yourself, to mean love your fellow human being as yourself. All right, that's what we talked about last week, but you could object. You could say, you know what, I don't know about this. Because a Samaritan is not really an idolater. I mean, a Samaritan, yeah, I know they're enemies of the Jews and everything, but they, you know, they're still, they're religious people at least, and they have the Torah, and they, you know, they, it's really kind of like a different sect of Judaism, really. I mean, it's a far cry from Roman idolatry of the rest of the world at that time, these Samaritans. And so if the master wanted to really make the point, you should love your enemy, you know, why not tighten the tension a little bit and make the third character a Nabataean? Yeah? Nabataean, you know, the Nabataeans, the sons, the Ishmaelites, Nabataeans, Arabs, think Arab. They're the ancient Arab. Why not make it? The third guy comes along is a Nabataean. Or better yet, the third guy comes along, and who should come along but a Roman soldier? I mean, then we'd be telling the parable of the good Roman, you know, rather than the good Samaritan, the good Roman. Yeah, there'd be a good Roman law. So does the master's choice of a Samaritan indicate that even Yeshua had placed some limits on the definition, on how far you push this thing of one's neighbor? And you could argue, because the Talmud takes up this question as well, not regarding the parable, but it's the same question. The Talmud wonders, does a Samaritan count as your neighbor? And is discussing this in a matter of Jewish law in several places where, you know, some of the sages accept the Samaritans as technically proselytes, but the majority opinion refers to them as the proselytes of lions. True. Proselytes of lions, it's a true story. You'd have to look it up, 2 Kings 17:26. It's an inside joke. The idea is they're a foreign population that adopted Judaism because they were afraid of lions. It's true. Anyway, really, never mind. You don't know what I'm talking about. 2 Kings chapter 17, verse 26. Find out why they're called proselytes of lions. That's the Samaritans, but that's not the point. The point is that despite the enmity and disdain that the Jewish people felt for the proselytes of lions, the Talmud allows for Samaritans to be included in the Torah's protections that apply to one's neighbor. All right, so you could make that argument. But here's how we know that the story is not limited to your fellow monotheist, to your fellow Samaritan, but that it might apply even to an idolater, that it could apply also to a Nabataean, that it could apply also to a Roman. Because it's not the Jew in the story who decides that the Samaritan can qualify. The Jew is not laying there saying, I guess the Samaritan is sort of my neighbor. You know, I mean, he still believes in God. Go ahead, help me out here. That's not the situation, that's not the story. It's the Samaritan who makes this decision to extend his definition of my neighbor. It's the Samaritan who acts as a neighbor and makes himself a neighbor by becoming a fellow to the wounded man, acting with empathy, doing unto others as he would have them do unto him. That's the master's rule. So Yeshua asks this expert in Torah, this sage, he says, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor to the man? It's not a difficult question. The lesson Yeshua is teaching in the story is not who is my fellow, it's not who must I love, as much as the lesson is be a neighbor, be a fellow to those in need, love others. Tell you a story of the good Muslim. I don't know if it's really appropriate or not, but a story from the darkest point in the story of the modern state of Israel, terrible massacre that took place in the War for Independence 1948, Kfar Etzion. Does that ring a bell to anyone? Kfar Etzion. It was like the Alamo of the modern state of Israel. And when the Arabs were reinforced, I think it was Egyptians were coming up, and when they were reinforced by the Arab Legion, and they overran this community, and this community fell. It was on the outskirts of Jerusalem, on the road to Jerusalem, and the Arabs overran this community, and they were executing everybody with firing squads. And when they surrendered, they forced the kibbutz surrendered. And there were no survivors. Well, there were survivors, almost no survivors. One survivor, Yaakov Edelstein, and another, Yitzhak Ben Sira, they tell the story of trying to hide amongst the jumble of boulders and branches, and they were discovered, they said, by a wrinkled, toothless old Arab. And this old Arab said to them, "Don't be afraid." "Well, what do you mean, don't be afraid?" It's like there's machine guns going, you're watching everybody you know being shot to death all around you. He says, "Don't be afraid." Well, then a group of Arab irregulars rush up, toss these two Jews up against the wall to shoot them, you know, up against the wall. And the old Arab shields them with his body. He says, "There's been enough killing today." And as they argue with the old Arab, legionaries came up, the Arab legionaries come up, and they took the two Jews under their protection. And so they survived. Likewise, at the same time that this was happening, Eliza Fockwagner, who was a member of the Palmach, you know, so she's a soldier, she was trying to hide in a ditch with several others, and they were discovered, and all shot except for Eliza, who was dragged away by a few of these irregulars, and they were about to rape her, when an Arab Legion officer arrives and he sees what's happening and he shot the perpetrators. He shot them on the spot and sent the others away. And then he took the girl rescued her and said, "You're under my protection now," and fed her, and she survived. And this is her story, you know. So if we're to, I just had to pull out some examples after the horror that we saw in Jerusalem this week. I had to pull out some examples. Which of these was a neighbor to Yaakov Edelstein, to Yitzhak Ben Sira, or Eliza Fockwanger? The Torah scholar replied, "The one who showed mercy." The one who showed mercy to him. The old Arab who rescued Edelstein and Ben Sira was a Muslim. The officer who rescued Fockwanger was a Muslim. But these Muslims acted with empathy. They did unto others as they would have it be done unto them. And by so doing, they became neighbors, fellows. So the real punchline of the parable is not that there was a wounded Samaritan on the road, and the priest and the Levite and the Israelite each had to decide whether or not a Samaritan qualified as their neighbor. Rather, the real punchline here is that the Samaritan showed himself to be a neighbor, to be a fellow to the Jew, by acting with empathy toward a stranger and showing compassion to one in need. I mean, the thing is, he was still a Samaritan the whole time. He was a Samaritan before, he was a Samaritan after. He still worshipped on the wrong mountain. He worshipped in Mount Gerizim, not in Jerusalem. He still had just about everything about his entire religion backwards and upside down. He was offering the wrong sacrifices, the wrong place. He's theologically messed up. As the master even said, "You Samaritans worship what you do not know. You don't even know what you're doing." This is Yeshua's assessment of the Samaritan religion. You don't know what you're doing. But despite all these ceremonial blunders and theological errors, the Samaritan fulfilled the verse that says, "For I desire chesed and not sacrifice, the knowledge of God rather than burnt offerings." Whereas the priest who came along had all of that in order. He had the Torah, he had all of Judaism, and he was the one, he had the correct place of worship, that's for sure. And he knew what to offer and where to offer it in the specified way. He had his theology down. He was right, and the Samaritan was wrong about God. He had the right theology, he believed the right things. Same with the Levite. The Levite believed the right things, the Samaritan believed the wrong things. Nevertheless, the compassion of the Samaritan made a more acceptable sacrifice before God than the holy priest and the Levite could offer in the temple. And this is the true worship of which the master said to the Samaritan woman, "Neither on this mountain in Samaria nor in Jerusalem will you worship the Father. True worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth." And the Father is seeking such people to worship him. So when Yeshua asked, which of these three do you think proved to be a neighbor? The sage did not reply, the Samaritan did. Instead, he replied, the one who showed mercy, the one who showed chesed. I think it's significant that this is the way he replied, that he said, the one who showed chesed, the one who showed mercy. He didn't say the Samaritan because he no longer identified the Samaritan in the story by his race or by his religion, but by his acts of love and mercy. And Yeshua said, go and do the same.
Take on my yoke and learn from me and find rest for your soul.